Sponsored by Canada's National Observer, this is the Canadian Centre for Journalism. I'm Shahriar Tajvidi, and I produce audio stories. We're calling this one the Observer Deck, and today is about providing a little window into our team's candid thoughts and some of the shifts and surprises they've experienced over these very erratic months. We're so grateful to still be here, and because of our community, we're now looking ahead to so much more. From all of us, thank you. The voices in this piece belong to Jenny Uechi and Janelle Johnson, our reporters Emma McIntosh, Carl Meyer, and Alistair Sharp. But first, let's turn to the woman who started the Observer Media Group, Linda Solomon Wood. Linda, take us back to much earlier in the year. What was that like?
I remember feeling in shock. The first big thought that got into my head in March, oh my God, this is it for National Observer. I just don't see how we're going to make it through this. A lot of dread in the beginning. Well, actually, when it first happened and we were first told that we should stay at home and, you know, things were stopping, maybe for a moment it actually felt lighter. But that just didn't last. I have two sons aged 18 and 24 and two stepdaughters, 13 and 16. When I would wake up in the middle of the night, which I think happened quite a lot in March, I would lie there and I would think about, what is the future for my kids? What do you think about being in lockdown again?
It's taking more of a toll on me than it ever did.
This round?
Yeah.
And what is the future for the company? This year has been so full of just having to look through every line item in the company and see where we could cut.
Before COVID, we did have an office in Toronto.
It just changed so radically, so fast.
It was this really cool little space off of Spadina Avenue in Chinatown. There was an amazing banh mi spot, like a couple doors down, and I loved it. I'm so heartbroken it's gone.
Now I work mostly from my basement. My kids are home, and it's a chaotic scene, but we're doing our best.
I found myself working at my kitchen table, which got really awkward because my roommates really like to eat lunch, like at the same time that Doug Ford likes to do his afternoon press conferences.
Data every single day. We're doing everything.
We had to figure some stuff out in terms of scheduling, and eventually I got a desk, so things are a lot better now.
Yes, we had some concerns around the financial viability of reporting during a time when journalism as an industry really was struggling to survive.
I didn't know at the start, like, what would happen.
I think many people had those kind of thoughts at the beginning of the pandemic, whether they would lose their jobs. In April, I was writing about people who were in a much different place than I was. I'm thinking of migrant and undocumented workers. Those are the folks who are farming and cooking food and taking care of everyone's grandparents and working on construction sites and really just running our society. And they're in such a precarious position. I had to come to the conclusion that I couldn't dwell on whether my job would be there. I just had to do the best job I could.
My thoughts around the staff was, how can I create security for everybody?
Oh yeah, that was definitely on the forefront of my mind. As rounds of layoffs hit other places, I definitely was stressed.
Gosh, can we get through this together as a team?
I think going outside has really kept me okay during this time.
So I became a dad this year. That whole process has been pretty surreal. My kid has been this bright spot this whole time, and that's been a really special thing to have. It's given me some real perspective about 2020.
My name is Alistair Sharp, and I'm the Toronto Youth Reporter at Canada's National Observer.
I'm Emma McIntosh. I'm kind of like the Swiss Army knife in the newsroom. I mainly cover Queen's Park, but I'm everywhere.
Hi, I'm Carl Meyer. I live in Ottawa, and I've been a journalist with National Observer since 2017.
There's a lot of space to report on stories that mean something to you. You know, the ability to go deeper into a topic, into a subject, and to put a bit more of the human touch into it.
I love that we focus on the environment, but not to the exclusivity of other issues like systemic racism.
That was a really compelling thing about the National Observer for me.
Once in a while, a reader sends me like a little note that just says like, hey, I really loved your story. I would compare that to like diving into Lake Ontario on a cold day. Maybe a cleaner lake, maybe like Lake Huron on a hot day. I carry that in my heart. You know, it's really, really nice.
Well, in March, we took the paywall down and we made all of our content free for quite a while. And what was very surprising was that people continued to subscribe without us asking, without us marketing. And that was amazing. Our month in March was one of our strongest months ever for subscription sales. And people were subscribing at the full price. It really is the lifeblood that keeps everything going. And the fact that people were willing to do that at such an uncertain time was really moving to me.
The pandemic also presented us with a clear body of work that we needed to do. I mean, this was something that was happening, and it was happening to us as well as the community that we report on.
The thing that really struck me was how much actually the environment very quickly became really, really relevant again. Pretty much right away, I started noticing that provinces and the feds were like delaying environmental moves or just stripping environmental protections. I was kind of like frustrated at first because I was like, well, no one's going to care. Like everyone's worried about when they're going to get their next package of toilet paper. And people actually did. You know, my first story about Ontario rolling back some protections temporarily got a lot of feedback from readers and from people who are really tapped into the environment.
I joke with my friends that the job's given me an environmental science degree. For a few years now, I've worked on some pretty technical stuff. Methane emissions and pipelines and refineries, climate finance, like risk disclosure. I love being able to take super technical stuff and make it accessible to people in a way that resonates with them.
Even in a crisis that's centered around health, which is not something that we really cover very much, like people still cared about what we were doing, about our wheelhouse.
Why does the minister think that a pandemic is the right time to suspend transparent reporting requirements for climate pollution?
In the end, like a lot of the things that we reported on got restored. It's always nice to see your journalism have an impact.
We are thinking about what is important for our audience and the best way to give that to them.
My name is Jenny Uechi, and I am the operations manager at Canada's National Observer. I've been with the Observer for close to 10 years.
I'm Janelle Johnson, manager of subscriber happiness. I've been with National Observer since the beginning. The thing to know about Linda is when she gets an idea, she runs with it.
Before the pandemic was like every 6 weeks between Vancouver and Ottawa and Montreal and Toronto, you know, talking to people about National Observer, bringing in more support. All of a sudden, no more meetings, not even hanging out in the office with my wonderful staff here in Vancouver. It was just a huge shift from a life really full of activity.
We were in lockdown. It was a Friday before the Easter long weekend. And Jenny and Linda and I were brainstorming about what we could do to connect with people in this circumstance.
You know, out of that really strong desire to connect more with people, I started a new series of Zoom conversations that pulled in our subscriber community.
So by the time Jenny and I got back to work on Tuesday, Linda had lined up David Suzuki for Thursday and got 1,300 people who RSVP'd.
I still remember the excitement of the first one.
We had no Zoom license, had never done a Zoom event before.
I know that all of us, particularly Janelle, had to master the whole thing in several days.
The learning curve was steep, but Thursday rolled around. We hit broadcast. David Suzuki was there. The guest came on.
David, thank you so much for joining me tonight of the first Zoom.
Let me say to the audience, every day I get up and I tune into the National Observer and thank God that you're there.
And it was completely magical.
Our audience really engaged with the series. We heard back from people saying, please keep doing these. We want to see more.
I don't think I ever would have gone this direction if COVID hadn't happened. This has really been a wonderful opportunity for me to get back and do one of the things I love best, which is talking to people.
My God, I'm looking out here. I'm seeing salmon out there feeding.
Oh, wow.
It's now become kind of a staple that people look for when they visit our site.
We knew right from the beginning we were onto something.
I don't know. I think that we adjusted really well.
I think what this crisis really showed me was why it's so important that we have a diversity of media.
We're in an environment now where we have too much data. The internet, which is unlimited. Governments are putting out more and more information. There's disinformation coming from all sorts of different places. Technology has empowered people to spread their own messages or the messages of their groups that they belong to farther and faster than any time before.
If no one is asking about the environment, it just won't really come up, right?
So there's a bit of an information overload, and I think you need media organizations to parse through that in a diligent way, in a respectful way, and to provide perspectives on everything that's out there.
One thing I know for sure is that people who are trying to tell stories in a way that accurately reflects how people are seeing the world, how they're experiencing the world, their challenges, the need for that is never going to go away.
National Observer is a secret gateway to everything cool. When it arose, it was because there was a real gap in terms of environmental reporting and energy reporting as well.
You know, we're established all across Canada now. Like, it would be so easy for us to up-level, to become prolific.
Having our own investigative unit, I think, is also a natural direction for us. Having a team focused on it, to have it coming out all the time, is like my dream.
We are still standing, but the health crisis is still grave and a lot continues to change. One of our reporters is currently battling COVID. We're not really sure where this pandemic ends and where we begin. We're in it. When I look ahead, I'm thinking of the courage to keep persisting. Continuing to build a community around the journalism we do. Journalism that matters. For that, I'm hopeful.
Well, hi. Thanks for staying with us. Though, really, we know that many of you have spent the last 5 years with Canada's National Observer, and that's amazing. We're going to be doing a whole lot more with audio in the new year, and we would love for you to participate. With your phone in a quiet space, record a voice note. Let us know one thing about The Observer that matters to you. Include your first name and your city, and send the recording to info@canadianjournalism.ca. We can't wait! The music for this episode came from Blue Dot Sessions, Poddington Bear, Silent Partner, and Daniel Birch. The original artwork, which actually features the reporters in this episode, is by Yedis Gedik. You can see it all on our website. A big nod also to my colleagues who participated around the country. They recorded their interviews from inside their closets with true work from home flair, so a big thanks to them as well. I'm Shahriel Tajvidi. Talk to you soon.